All right, so we're diving deep today, and we've got a case that I think really highlights how tricky capital murder charges can be, especially when you throw a felony into the mix. Walker v. Mississippi.
Yeah, it really does.
I've got, let's see, a pretty thorough case brief, a perplexity analysis. Someone was kind enough to share that, and what looked like some key excerpts from the actual court proceedings. Should be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. You know what really jumps out about Walker and what I think we're going to spend some time unpacking is how it makes you think about like the core stuff of criminal liability, you know?
Sure.
Like, can you really have a death penalty conviction if the felony that bumps it up to capital murder, arguably, happens after the victim is already dead?
It's almost like which came first, the chicken or the egg, legally speaking.
Exactly, yeah. And then beyond that, even like, how do all those procedural rules, the technical stuff from the trial, how do those shape what happens on appeal? Sometimes it feels like those rules matter even more than the legal arguments themselves. I think anyone who's serious about criminal law, this is big stuff.
It's foundational, really.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's set the scene here. September 8, 1990, Long Beach, Mississippi. We've got Allendale Walker, Jason Reiser, his accomplice, and our victim, Kanya Edwards, just 19 years old.
Oh, so young.
The case brief lays it all out,
Yeah.
and it's a rough sequence of events at Crystal Lake. We're talking sexual assault, and they used a stick, manual strangulation, stomping on her neck, drowning, and then, like, to add to the horror, they burned the body.
Well,
Oh, and they also note that Walker kept Kanya Edwards' dress.
God.
Gruesome stuff. Now, Jason Reiser, he ends up being a key part of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, he flips, right.
He gives testimony against Walker, and in exchange, he gets a life sentence. This kind of plea deal, it's common, but man, is it ever controversial.
For sure, you always wonder about the motivation there, how much that colors what they say on the stand.
Right. But testimony aside, they had some hard evidence too. They found Kanya Edwards' dress at Walker's place, and there's Walker's initial confession. But here's where things get really interesting, and it really shows you how important our rights are. That confession, it gets thrown out
Repressed, yeah.
by the court. They said because Walker was so intoxicated when he confessed, it wasn't voluntary Fifth Amendment stuff. This is huge. Even when you have such an awful crime, the how of getting the evidence, it matters.
Absolutely. You can't just ignore due process, even then. Makes you think, how much weight do we give to a confession when the person might not even know what they're saying?
Exactly, yeah. So now we get to the real legal brain teaser here, the thing that all our sources keep coming back to. When did the sexual battery happen?
Yeah.
How can that be the felony that makes a capital murder if the injuries that killed her might have happened before the, act itself was completely
Yeah.
finished? It's almost like a legal chicken or the egg situation.
Yeah, right. That's the knot we got to untie here. But what the Mississippi Supreme Court says, it gives us a big clue about this whole felony murder thing.
Okay.
They're saying what really matters is intent.
Intent.
If the prosecution can prove that Walker intended to commit sexual battery before or while he's killing her, then legally speaking, that's enough for capital murder, even if the actual penetration, didn't happen till after she was dead.
So the exact timing, it's not the be all end all.
Right. It's more about what was in his head.
And Justice Smith, in the majority opinion, he's pretty clear about it. He says, quote, "The fact that death preceded consummation of the felony doesn't vitiate the charge."
Straight to the point, no wiggle room.
Basically, it's not like the charge just disappears because she died before the felony was technically finished.
Nope. They're looking at everything that happened, the whole picture, and his mental state while it was all going down.
So what was he thinking? What was his intention?
Exactly. And the fact that he assaulted her with a stick, that becomes super relevant. Regardless of exactly when it happened relative to her death, the court's likely seeing that as pretty strong evidence that he intended to commit sexual battery.
This goes back to the basics, right?
Yeah.
Criminal liability. You need the bad thought, the mens rea, and the bad act, the actus reus. It's got to be both. Here, they're basically saying the intent, it was there during this whole awful crime.
Makes sense. Okay, let's move on to the appeals part of this case. Get this. Walker raises 22 separate issues in his appeal.
22.
22. Makes you wonder, why didn't more of those arguments stick? And this is where procedural rules, they really show their power.
Oh, for sure. This is something you got to get, especially if you're thinking about being a lawyer. We're talking about procedural default, which comes a lot from the contemporaneous objection rule. It's like this. If you don't object to something right then and there during the trial, whether it's evidence, instructions for the jury, whatever, you usually can't bring it up for the first time on appeal.
The idea is the trial court needs a chance to fix things if they go wrong, to keep things fair and efficient. You can't just save up your objections like a secret weapon to use later if you don't like the outcome.
Like a get out of jail free card.
Exactly.
And Walker, it gives us some real world examples of this. Because his lawyer didn't object to certain jury instructions during the trial, they couldn't bring those arguments up on appeal. Same thing with some testimony they didn't like, no motion for mistrial. So that issue was procedurally defaulted too. It shows you got to be on top of things, detail oriented, really understand how trials work.
Yeah, it's a hard lesson, but it's the reality. The appeals court, they're not there to do the trial over again. They're looking for big mistakes the trial court made. But if there's a mistake and nobody pointed it out at the time, the appeals court's not going to be too happy about it. They want finality. They want to respect what happened at the trial. Plus, it prevents what we call sandbagging. You can't just keep quiet about a problem, hoping to use it on appeal later if you lose.
That makes sense, yeah. But here's the thing. The Mississippi Supreme Court, they actually did look at some of Walker's claims, even though they were technically procedurally barred. Why do you think that is?
It's a tactic, especially in death penalty cases. You know, the stakes are so high. Even if something's been procedurally defaulted, they might look at it anyway just to prevent more legal fights later, specifically habeas corpus petitions. Habeas corpus, that's a whole other way to challenge your imprisonment, usually saying your rights were violated.
I see.
So by addressing those claims, even when they could just ignore them, the court's trying to make things super clear, hoping to prevent years of legal battles down the road. But it doesn't mean those rules don't matter. It's more like an emergency valve, not an excuse to just blow off trial procedure.
Okay, so now let's talk about the dissenting opinion here, Justice McGray. Always good to see where the judges didn't agree. What was his main point?
His big argument was that all the errors in the trial together added up to Walker being denied a fair trial. He wasn't happy with how much evidence there was about exactly when the sexual battery happened. He thought it was shaky, not enough to really link it as the reason for the capital murder charge. He also thought the court was wrong to deny a continuance for the defense, which would have given them more time to get ready, and he thought they limited the defense's closing arguments too much.
So the majority focused on intent and following the rules, but the dissent, he's more worried about the fairness of the whole thing and whether there was enough solid proof to tie the sexual battery to the capital murder charge.
Exactly. And it's worth pointing out, Justice McGray, he wasn't really saying the evidence itself shouldn't have been allowed, except for that continuance thing, which he said hurt the defense's ability to prepare. His main problem was with how strong the evidence was. You know, was it enough? And did Walker have a real chance to defend himself, to have the jury hear his side? It's a tough balance, making sure things are done by the book, but also making sure it's fair, especially when it's a death penalty case.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Walker v. Mississippi, what are the two big things you want our listeners to take away?
First thing is about the felony murder rule when it comes to sexual assault. The prosecution, they don't necessarily got to prove the assault was finished before the victim died. What matters is proving that the intention to commit the assault was there before or during the murder.
Got it.
Second thing, and this is huge for future lawyers, you gotta follow those procedural rules at trial. You miss your chance to object. You might lose your right to even bring up a good legal argument on appeal. Object early, object often. It's not just a saying, it's how you survive in court.
It's the golden rule for sure. This case, it really shows you that balancing act the appeals courts have to do. They got to consider the legal arguments, but they also got to make sure everyone's following the rules.
Yeah.
And as we saw in Walker, messing up the procedure can have huge irreversible consequences. Sometimes it doesn't even matter if your argument is good if you didn't play by the rules earlier on.
Exactly. And it leaves you with a question, you know, kind of a tough one. Given all the back and forth about when the felony happened in this case and the fact that the death penalty, there's no going back from that. Does this case and others like it make you wonder if capital punishment is always the right answer, even when you have a felony and a murder mixed together? It's complicated. You got to think about intent, the order of events, what our justice system is really all about. Something to chew on as you keep learning about the law.
Absolutely. Something to think about. All right. That's our deep dive for today. See you next time.